RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
All right. The draft master plan to relocate Westport has been proposed to the Buller District Council, and a group of locals are fighting back against the proposed managed retreat. Paul Reynolds, Desna Bruce and Adriana James are members of Save Buller. They're a local activist group, and that bunch of activists joins us right now. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hello. How do you do?
Adriana, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for hosting us.
And Desna, welcome. Welcome back after being overseas, right?
Thank you. Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, we'll find out maybe a bit about that as well. All right, so first question is, I guess, does Westport have a flooding problem?
Well, I would say yes, we do, but it's all man-made due to either alteration of our landscape or neglect by two councils, our district council and our regional council.
And we must point out, Paul Reynolds has a New Zealand certificate in engineering, civil engineering, and other stuff on the CV. So he kind of knows what he's talking about when it comes to engineering. So, okay, how explain that more, Paul. Council problem. Tell us what's happened.
Well, if anyone's listening likes to go into Google Earth and have a look at the mouth of the Buller River, they'll see the training walls built for the harbour at the mouth of the river have been narrowed. They were deliberately narrowed to increase the flow to cut dredging costs. But if you restrict an outlet, you reduce the amount of water that can get out. There's the first major problem.
Right.
But there's five of them I could go through.
Yeah, might as well, just to set things up so people can get an idea.
When the harbour was first built back in the 1870s, and I'd pop in there that my a relative was the engineer on the supervising construction of it back in the 1870s. They built rock walls up the Buller River to stop surplus floodwater flowing down the Irrawaddy Channel, which is a surplus channel to bypass floodwater. They didn't build the walls to stop all water, but just to limit it to what the Irrawaddy Channel could carry. I have two reports that were written, that were written to council in 2015 warning them that the flood situation was developing there that needed gravel removal. And our council did absolutely nothing with it.
Why? Do we know?
Oh, because they're inept. I have inept.
It's not like trying to skimp on spending, just ineptitude.
Just ineptitude. I've got two reports on maintenance work they need to do on water supply tunnels, which they ignored too until they fell down. They had to spend $10 million replacing the whole thing. So when I say they're inept, I've got a list of other examples such as that. So nothing was done. When the flood hit in 2021, the shingle build-up directed the current at the protection walls and destroyed them, letting too much water come down the overflow channel. Those walls have now been repaired at the ratepayers' cost of over $1 million.
Hmm.
And so that's the second problem. Third one is the Kiwi Rail replay. They have a railway line into Westport from the north, bringing coal in, and it crosses the overflow channel called the Irrawaddy River. And they took out trestle bridges and they replaced them with causeway. And in the causeway, they put a few skinny pipes during the flood.
I can just imagine.
Yep. It turned into a dam that burst and did major damage to the railway and sent a wave of water downstream that got me at Snodgrass and got Westport in Kawitiri Place and the north of Westport.
That's shockingly man-made.
Absolutely man-made.
Anyone else got anything to say about what Paul's just been talking about in the last minute or two? Before we go on, Adriana or Desna, no?
Yeah, I'd like to add that,
No, go, Adriana.
I'd like to add that on the West Coast Regional Council website, there is actually a chronology of flooding along the whole of the West Coast. It's a document dated between 1846 and 1990. There have been floods in Westport, but none as devastating as the one in 2021. So you've got to ask yourself the question, why did the town cope previously and not now?
Well,
it is a high rainfall area.
Of what Paul's been saying.
Yes, exactly. But these are not being taken into account when we've got this master plan going on.
We'll get on to the master plan in just a moment. Paul, is there any other points that we should know about before we get on to the next stuff?
If we come back to the mouth of the Buller River, when those harbour walls were extended, it caused accretion at the mouth that drifted further north and blocked off the Irrawaddy overflow channel, the flood overflow channel. So instead of going downstream from the State Highway Bridge right on the edge of Westport, it's forced the river to go between 4 and 6 kilometres further north. Huh. And so it restricted its outflow. So when I was an engineer with Buller County, we had plans on the drawing board before we were forced to amalgamate to form Buller District Council that were for a cut to the sea to stop the problem eventuating that we've got today. And nothing has been done since Buller District Council came on the scene except employ hordes of staff.
Right. Okay. And you said there were five, I think we're four. Any more to go?
Well, there are areas of Westport that flooded that were above the height of the water, the highest point that reached in the Buller River. They were flooded not with water from the Buller River, but water that flowed out of council drains because they are slightly lower than other parts of the town. Because council has added to the area of town and they pumped sewage into the system, into a pipework that it was never designed to take. And so people have sewage in their back lawn and their backyard sometimes now because the pipework they're pumping it into is too small to transmit it to the Buller River. And these people that were flooded are houses that were 100 years old, never flooded in their past. Higher than flood level, council water.
All right. So why does the draft master plan propose relocating the town?
It's a smokescreen to cover the problems I've just iterated. It's to make out the climate did it.
Because I see, I've read some of the literature and the language comes through ever increasing, like what?
That's exactly where our problems lie. We tried desperately, I'm still in the process of trying to get data from them. How did they predict the sea level rise? What RCP value did they use for that? What measurements did they take for inundation? What measurements did they take for storm surge? They can't provide them. They just don't. So we've got no data, but we've got all of this stuff put on us that we're going to have to move the town. Our insurances have gone up. Our property values have plummeted. For what, really?
Well, it doesn't really make sense, does it?
No.
So you've got to ask, well, why is that? Who gains from moving the town?
Well, quite frankly, the town isn't going to be moved because it's just pure fantasy.
So that's never going to happen?
No. Just the reconstruction alone of roads and streets and footpaths and water supplies and all
that. Well, they've said 20, 50, maybe 100 years, I see in the reporting of it anyway. So it's any time between 20 and 100 years.
Well, before the half million was spent on that, and before
half a million to find that out,
and before the 700,000 that was spent on Future Buller to scaremonger us about climate change, what they needed to do was have an independent inquiry into the cause of the flood.
Yeah,
and that way we may say a cut to the sea might cost 10 million, but it'll be cheaper than spending 30 million putting walls around Westport.
Yeah, but that's obvious.
It is to us, but I believe that there's a smokescreen going on to cover those man-made causes because the council owns the port, so shift the walls.
Say that again?
The council owns the port. The narrowed harbour walls are should never be narrowed.
Remove okay.
them. Make the river wider to get rid of the water.
Of course, we're familiar with managed retreat. We've examined Kapiti quite extensively over the time. I'm starting to feel managed retreat possibilities here.
Well, that's exactly what we've been pushing against, and that's what they're hedging around and very cleverly now trying to spin us that this is a generational thing. It will only happen in a couple of hundred or 100 years, 50 to 100 years. But originally, it was seen as managed retreat. That was in their $500,000 report by one of the local...
Originally?
Yes. So before this managed proposal of moving the town, there was already talk of managed retreat. They had an area allocated for it, much in the similar area to what they're planning to move the town to. But I suspect, and probably this is the cynical me, that having looked at the pictures of the draft master plan, they've got little pockets of areas where they will house people, so they're not all in one area.
Mm.
This sounds to me like 15-minute cities.
Oh, what? Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's true, but it sounds like that to me.
Well, you can scale that up and down. It doesn't need to be a big metropolis or whatever, fragmented up into 15-minute cities. It can be just little provincial areas too. You know, so it's the same configuration, maybe.
And we're a good guinea pig. It's a small community. It's not a very rich community. A lot of people are not very well educated. That's not all the people, obviously. So it's an easy community to pull the wool over their eyes of. Mm. So it's a good practice run.
Desna, you got anything to say? Don't want to leave you out.
Well, I would add to Paul and Adriana's comments they try to make it look like it's all benign and everything is done for our well-being and our safety and well-being and so on. And that kind of reminds you of the whole, you know, COVID thing, doesn't it?
Yep, PTSD coming on strong.
And, yeah, so, you know, that's how we started in this because both Adriana and I live at Carter's Beach. And, you know, they're putting this blanket coastal hazard mapping. We are under coastal hazard alert. And then they go, oh, but it's okay. It won't affect your day-to-day use of the property. And, you know, it has affected it right from now because we already have on our LIM reports a proposed hazard mapping. And so our properties have dropped in value. My insurance, I've been here 3.5 years since March 2021, and my insurance costs have risen by 55% in that time.
On this?
Well, I would say
the inundation.
Because the first rise was June 2022, and that's when they did the original coastal mapping. And what they did this year was the variation mapping overlay. So then they used their fancy new LIDAR equipment.
Oh, yeah, the ground radar, whatever. Yep.
Yeah, which basically is just a contouring thing. So it doesn't measure, you know, and so that's what we are, you know, if you're going to make these zoning and hazards and affecting our properties directly, well, then you need to back it up with some pretty robust scientific evidence. And that's what we are now, you know, trying to get out of them. And they're all passing the buck. I think, Paul, you've written to NIWA, to NEMA, GNS, United Nations, Auditor General, Regional Council. And I think Paul can continue that. None of them have got any data to back this up. And, you know, what RCP have they used? I believe that the sea level, New Zealand Sea Level Rise Program recommends that councils use a low confidence scenario for the RCP. So that would mean using the 8.5, which is what the Jacobs report used for.
In company,
So that's not great because the IPCC actually say don't use it.
Not for policy purposes. Can anyone tell me who Dexterra are?
I can tell you who Dexterra are. I've followed them around the Buller District as they've milked $700,000 out of the Buller District Council to scaremonger the population on climate change. Not that they've expressed it that way. Dexterra is a private company.
Yep.
One of the proprietors is a environmental scientist, supposedly. Friend of council, employed by council on various things, including this climate change group in association with Canterbury University. And the first I knew of it was a meeting in the Knockawall Hall to ask people, you know, in this lovely neck of the woods that we live in, what would you like to save? And so it was all going to happen. And they've published booklets which give every calamity known to man. We're going to have rising groundwater, falling aquifers. And when you put those two together, it doesn't really make sense, does it? More storms.
How does that work? Can someone explain? You're an engineer. Explain that one to me.
But unfortunately, she had printed in a local paper that Westport may have to have mandatory relocation because of rising groundwater. Well, I know personally, if pits dug 4 metres deep in Westport and there's no groundwater in 4 metres, Christchurch has less than two. So I know that that is not a problem. Whereas rising sea level, well, if we've got to adapt for rising sea level, right.
You can do that, right?
We need to do it if we have some data to say what we need to adjust to.
Yeah, but so no data. No data.
I've asked them for the data, and they say they haven't got any, but NIWA has. But I wrote to NIWA, and they haven't got any. I've written to the regional council, they haven't got any. And every place they've said there's data, I've written to, and they all confirm there is no long-term reliable data on rising sea level on the west coast of the South Island.
Well, that's stunning. That's stunning.
Well, particularly since it's a $1 billion loss to ratepayers in Westport for every 169 of them. And the reason I say a $1 billion loss is because if you're into maths and you know what the future value formula is, as insurance companies increase the cost of insurance, it only takes $169,000. So you can say that's 169 ratepayers that are now forced to pay an extra $1,000 because they've been said they're in a hazard zone.
Yep. Yep.
If you invest $169,000 per year at 6% interest, then at the end of 100 years, you have $1 billion in the bank. And of course, the insurance industry that's on a long-term investment with those.
Yeah, that's what they think of.
It's going to be much more than $1 billion because the insurance costs are going to go up in that time. And the risk may not even be there because in 50 years' time, we might say, hey, it has risen 300 millimetres. Let's put a bund along the front of Carter's Beach and protect it. So they're never going to have the risk anyway.
So the LIM reports have been affected, but there's zero data to back any of that up. How can that? That can't stand, can it?
Well, you need data to put into your modelling, so that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, but you're taking the hit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If your property value's gone down, hell, you're taking the hit, man.
We have. Willem DeLonghi's counter-report up at Kapiti Coast, he earmarked about 49 properties as compared to 8,000 or something from the Jacobs report by the council. But, you know, it was quite sensible and just going, well, we just monitor it. And there was actually a report done here in 2017 by NIWA for the regional council just on Carter's Beach, which was very in line with what Willem DeLonghi said. It was the training walls for the Buller River have actually caused the sand that used to, you know, wash right up the coast. In fact, it's the same sand that formed the farewell spit up in Golden Bay. So now a lot of that sand has stopped because of the tip heads. And I've seen it in 3.5 years here at Carter's Beach. There's the beginnings of little sand dunes and grasses. They were not there when I moved here.
So it's backing up.
And the report says very sensibly, we just monitor it, just measure it. What's wrong with
that? That'll make it go away.
When it put a bund, put a little, you know, a trigger point. You know, but if they don't want to do common sense. They don't want to do it's alarmism. It's worst case scenario, and you know we're the ones paying for it, the property owners. So it does seem like a real threat to private property ownership in New Zealand.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. The pattern's there.
Yeah.
All right. So what happens now? Where are we at?
If I could just add a bit to that, in my lifetime, the extensions to those harbour walls, so they were extended about 1962 for the third time, they've accreted something like 40 million tonnes of sediment.
Wow.
So the erosion we've got at Grantley further north, you can imagine would be much less if that material had been allowed to drift north. So on the west coast of the South Island, we have littoral drift running from the south to the north. So when they used to dredge the Buller River, some wanted to know where they could dump that would help Granity. They painted rocks white. And when they dumped in different places, they looked at the beach at Granity and found those rocks are coming ashore. So they used that particular site as a dumping spot to help the beach to the north. But the accretion caused by the harbour walls themselves, I estimated at least 40 million tonnes since they did the last extension. A massive amount of material that should feed the beaches further north, and it's not in circulation to do that.
So would that mean a redesign of those walls or just maintenance? You dredge every now and then. I don't know how you do it. I've got no experience in dredging. But, you progressively remove the build-up over time.
No, you can't remove it. The dredge was only to cut a channel through the bar. Gotcha. So the way a river forms, the sediment that comes out forms a ridge just outside the river mouth, and the dredge would cut a channel through there to allow extra shallows to go out. But the volumes of the river shifts in a flood, you need a fleet of dredges working 24 hours a day, 365 days a year to shift up. The accretion isn't just the beach to the mouth of the walls. It's extending out beyond that. So when I stand on the end of the walls today, I see it just total shoaling right out to sea. The last time it was extended, the engineers that did say it's the last extension that's possible. So they'd extend it twice before to get out into deep water to save dredging costs. But knowing what the shelf is like out beyond, the people in the know spoke to some of the locals and said this is the last extension that is possible. So it does need a marine engineer to clarify that. And to know what can we do? Do we take off the tips of the walls and let that sand drift north? Because it's not doing any benefit today. But we do need an independent inquiry into the cause of the flood, which will look at the marine condition, as well as the factors that I mentioned before. Critical too, because we can't plan to fix a problem unless you know what caused the problem. And that's what we've got engineers doing now by planning walls around Westport. They're planning walls around Westport without knowing what effect all those factors I mentioned have had. And I have no confidence in them for that reason. I'm a practical person. I don't fix anything unless I identify the problem first. You can't fix it unless you know that.
Okay. All right. So is awareness in the community starting to grow?
Yes, it is.
They feel hamstrung. I mean, they don't understand the process. I mean, and maybe if I go back a bit there and explain what the TTP is.
Yeah.
The West Coast, we have a regional council, West Coast Regional Council, and we have three district councils. Where we are here in the Buller District Council. Each council has to have an annual plan, long-term plan, and a district scheme. The local government commission got involved recently and dictated that the regional council had to prepare Buller District Council's scheme.
Okay. Now,
they didn't have staff to do it. So they've employed people from all around the country. And I would question their ability. They were people that were looking for work at the time.
Okay.
Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
They didn't have money for the job, so they went to the job and borrowed, and I believe the spending's up towards about $5 million.
Borrowed?
They didn't have, so they accepted the job. They should have told the local government commission, we haven't got staff for the job, we haven't got money for it.
They just sort of carried out the order of the local government.
Yeah, and the local government commission has broken the Local Government Act by getting involved anyway. And the reason I say that is that if 10% of the electors in a region approach the local government commission for change, then they can investigate it. Well, no one in Buller District Council, as far as I'm aware of, approached them for a change. What did happen is some people in another district wanted to amalgamate all the councils on the coast. But there's no signatures, there's certainly not 10%. I wouldn't say there was any more than 10 that might have come from the Buller area. So local government commission working on a suggestion of people in another district to amalgamate Buller with them, they got such a backlash from the Buller community, they had to not proceed with that option. But in the interim, they said, but you've got to produce the district scheme.
Right.
Combined district scheme instead of each district having its own. So now we've got people that are hired from all around the country, employed by the regional council, that think they know what the coast conditions are. And I say they don't. The coastline around Westport in particular is an artificial coast for the reasons I've mentioned. The river extensions that have built Carter's Beach, on the planners' maps, Carter's Beach has photos in there with them saying, oh, look at the erosion. Look at the erosion. Well, I look at the same photo and say, I see accretion. Because in my grandparents' time, Carter's Beach didn't exist. It was underwater, and so was Westport Airport. They were only accreted because of the extensions to the harbour walls, which caused accretion. So it's not under any threat of being washed away anytime soon. But the bit nearest the beach will come and go a little bit. It's natural.
That amalgamation you're talking about, I might have missed something, and I'm just a dumb guy on the street, remember that. But do they all have a similar plan that allows some form of retreat, or is it just this area?
My understanding about that is that the TTPP, Tetai or Potini, which is a branch of the West Coast Regional Council, given the instruction to create this long-term plan, they don't take any accountability for anything that will happen with it. So they're just putting in the hazard maps and the overlays and identifying which areas are going to flood and which are not. And then it's up to the district councils to decide how to act on that.
Yeah, so, but they'll probably all march ultimately left to their own devices in the same direction, won't they?
Oh, I believe they are, but they absolutely won't acknowledge that. So they've said to us they have nothing to say about managed retreat, because that was our first cry. So they've pushed us back and said, you've got to go to your own local council. They are the ones who are planning how to act on the maps that we've given them. So it's a local council that's really directly responsible for managed retreat and now this draft plan to move Westport.
That might be so, but if they're all on the same song sheet, that doesn't matter.
But they won't say it. They won't acknowledge it.
I would add to that that the whole thing of doing the coastal hazard mapping was actually a central government directive for all areas of New Zealand.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're fulfilling that. And, yeah, as Adriana said, they're just doing the report and giving it to council, and then they've kind of done their job. But, you know, in our research for finding out more information on all this, you know, there's an 842 page from the expert working group on managed retreat and many more.
There's your $700,000 gone there, Paul, right there.
Yeah. Well, right. That's a central government thing, though.
Oh, well, but you can work it out per page and apply it to that.
And then all of these reports, and there's many, you know, all national adaptation. Anyway, there's just loads of different departments, and it all becomes a bit of a maze, really. But they all have this disclaimer. No responsibility will be taken for any, you know, action or work used on the advice of this report. And it's like, they're all spending loads of money writing all these reports. We're the poor, you know, people
doesn't
at the bottom.
Sound like, doesn't sound like they're terribly confident.
No, doesn't, does it? I mean, would you go and buy a car from a manufacturer who says...
It might get you home. It might get you home.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just incredible. Yeah.
I want to add to that what Paul said about the TTPP's employing process. They've got people from Wellington, from Gisborne, from all over the country, with our Kapiti Coast. They've got people who don't even live here.
Do you think they all know each other, Adriana?
Yeah, I do think they do.
I don't know, but I do know that they're out of their depth. They're trying to deal with the length of coastline, the length from Auckland to Wellington. And it's they've already mucked up once because they had to go back and re-notify. So I believe they're out of their depth. If they weren't, they wouldn't have to go back and re-notify. So they've made mistakes, which I'm not even fully aware of just how the mistakes are made. It's an intricate mess, if you ask me. Yeah. The main thing I would like to say is, unfortunately in the Buller, we've got people that just want to rubber stamp things through, and so do the planners. So at the last meeting that was proposed, it was proposed and seconded by Buller District Council members, and it's when the commissioners looked at it, they said, well, it's not good enough, re-notify. So our local delegates from our own council don't know what they're doing, but they're going to be back there again, aren't they? They have a second go. The only honourable thing that was said, the only honest thing that was said at that meeting was from the Mayor of Greymouth, who said she did not want her name to be associated with it. So that's a first person coming out with an honest statement. And obviously,
well, that's quite strong. That's quite a strong thing to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So she switched on, but it's time the rest of them woke up and said exactly the same thing. It needs to be thrown out. It is a detriment to the coast. It's a detriment to the people that live here. It's going to strip their properties of value. It's going to leave them with a worthless property in time without any compensation, and it's all based on no data.
Yeah, okay. That's the mic drop right there, no data. All right, so what can people do now?
We're trying to, first of all, start off with building up awareness amongst the community of what's going on. Because people are busy, they have busy lives, they don't have time to take note of all these things, and they just keep plodding on each day. So the first task is awareness. The second one is fundraising so that we can shine a bigger light on what we're doing. And thank you to you for giving us that opportunity. And then at the moment, we're in a situation where the re-notification of the submission has been given, but we've given a one-month date in which to resubmit. Now, that's also quite a chaotic situation because previously everybody was notified. This time they've decided the re-notifications will only go to properties that are affected and anybody who have submitted in the past. So they've narrowed their field. So we're trying to get the knowledge out there.
Yeah.
But also we're trying to prepare people to write good submissions. I don't know that those submissions get really taken much note of. Although having said that, it's the commissioners who listened to submissions who insisted on a re-notification.
Right.
So one of our things to do is to prepare our people with facts and arm them with details. But to get any of those facts and details from this organization is nigh impossible.
But that's an argument in of itself, isn't it?
That yes, it is.
You're not giving us any details.
Yes.
You have none. And there'll be a reason why you're not doing that. Why is that?
Exactly. So we've already been through the ombudsman. It's still with him.
How long do you have to wait?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been pushing. There's a bit of movement, but not enough. What we're doing now is all the communication that's going, asking for details, asking for facts, asking for support towards getting these submissions ready, all of that is being documented, and all of that is evidence that will go to the ombudsman once this period, this 1 month, is over. Because I can't see us getting what we want. So it's a further addition to our complaint with the ombudsman.
Yeah, so a month is what, at this time of year? Or when, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it's a totally unfair process. I mean, that they've used $5 million of our money that they borrowed, that we're responsible for, to hire whichever professionals they want, for as long as they want, to prepare this document, and then it gets thrown to the public with days to make a submission. And I don't feel competent of putting a full submission in myself. I don't understand it fully myself. And I know that speaks for 99% of the population of my region.
Well, they probably know that too.
There's barely enough time for someone to get legal advice on this. The submission period, if you had to go to a lawyer and get legal advice on it, and the lawyer to study it and give you an opinion, you haven't got time to do that within the submission period. It's just a totally unfair playing field, and the whole process needs to be thrown out.
Yeah, they're just box ticking, and their engagement with the community. Last year they had several drop-in sessions, and this is their new way of engaging. So they don't get you all in a room and have a big public meeting. It's made to look like, oh, it's one-on-one, you can chat with them personally. Oh,
so you fragment up any show of opposition, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, and then they have some pretty pictures on the wall and ask you stupid questions like, oh, what do you like about living at Carter's Beach? And it's pathetic. It's like kindergarten stuff. There's no real information.
Well, unfortunately, you probably just nailed the way in which, because this is a pattern too, people being treated like they're really dumb.
Yeah.
They could never understand this. And there's no point of even trying to explain it because they'll never get it because they're dumb. That seems to be another part of this pattern. It's, I don't know, hubris, arrogance, whole mixture of everything. I don't know, but it does seem to be the attitude.
Mm. You see, with the first letter that they wrote to the community, they included a link so that you could go and look at the map and identify your property to see what hazard it was under. Many people couldn't access the link. The link broke. It didn't work. There were so many problems with it. In fact, in their own committee meeting, the chairman of the committee said he couldn't access the link on his iPad. But yet yet they expect the community to be satisfied that this is what they're given. And they've got to deal with the loss of value in their property, the increased insurance, the limb report.
Well, can't you demand that it comes off the limb right now?
It's one of the things we're going to have to work on.
I mean, it's almost
what we want.
I mean, you want to be in the street on that. I would be.
Yes.
You know, because if it's based on nothing, it's,
We're certainly under the yoke of some sort of ism.
What is it?
We'll call it councilism for want of another.
That's a good one. That'll stick.
But we're just being herded like cattle. And we're being milked for every dollar we can provide, but they seem to forget we own the business. Every dollar that our community is worth, we ratepayers paid for it. We engage our managers by an electoral process who hire some staff to assist them, and we are feeling like we are herded like cattle.
Yeah.
They make every decision we have. They've even got a bylaw here to tell you how many cats you're allowed to own. Right, we're regulated and controlled by the people that are meant to be serving us.
Mm. All right, well, that's very well put. Let's we're coming up against time, so last comments probably now. So that was real good place, Paul, that you left us there.
Following on from what Paul has just said, it's part of this whole new over-managerial overlay that's come in, really. So instead of being from the bottom up, where we used to have borough councils and Ministry of Works and so on, it's now coming from top down. And so from, you know, local government, and then you go up to central
government.
It's
very Marxist, isn't it?
Yes, it is rather. And, you know,
coincidentally,
right from United Nations, WEF, the whole lot. It's a huge thing we're fighting, and we feel like we're just this small group, you know, supposed to be enjoying our retirement here, and suddenly, as you said in the beginning, we find we're activists. It's not really,
all of a sudden, woke up one morning,
our comfort zone, but we're motivated to keep fighting against it because it's just ludicrous. It's totally unfair, and we don't, you know, they can't do it. It's immoral, and it's not ethical, and it's a lie, basically. It's a huge lie.
So let's finish where we started. So there's never going to be another Westport.
I don't believe so, no. Well, it's mathematically.
Because that's not what it's about, right?
Well, you've got to think about it like this too, that how are people going to move? Their properties are now pretty valueless. Westport's never had a very high property value rate. It's gone down further. How are they going to sell those? To who are they going to sell them so that they can fund the buying of another property in the dry zone? It's just not possible.
All right. I think we've had final words, haven't we? Are we safe to say? Yeah. Where can people go? Social media, Facebook group. Maybe you want to just give us the name of that as well so people can search it out. Save Buller, right?
Yeah, that's right. And we've got an email address as well if anybody wants to use that. It's just savebuller@proton.me.
Okay. All right. We'll put that up with the replay, that link. Okay.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
So I want to thank for coming on our program, Paul Reynolds. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Desna Bruce.
Thank you.
Thank you, Desna. And Adriana James. Thank you, Adriana.
Thank you.
Let's see what happens, and we'll keep an eye on things, and we'll follow it through.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.